John Howard had already led the Liberal National Coalition to victory twice by 2001, and he intended to do so again. The leader of Australia's Liberal Party, which is Australia's Conservative Party, carried a reputation for being a masterful mediator between factions. But there were signs of a shift in the electorate. Rising petrol prices and the unpopular goods and services tax had helped lead to a slump in the polls. A wind of political change was blowing, and it was coming from the right.
I believe we are in danger of being swamped by Asians. They have their own culture and religion, form ghettos, and do not assimilate.
The election that had first brought the Howard government to power in 1996 had also unleashed a new political firebrand upon the electorate. Pauline Hanson arrived on the public stage with a uniquely divisive brand of politics, and though she was dismissed by many as a senseless provocateur from the fringes, her message proved remarkably effective, even if she was often not entirely in control of it.
Are you xenophobic? Please explain.
Xenophobia means a fear of all things foreign.
No, I don't think I am.
The switchboards of talkback radio lit up with fears of migrants taking over and so-called illegal arrivals threatening Australia's national security. Prime Minister John Howard talked to characterising asylum seekers as queue jumpers. Australia didn't operate an embassy in Afghanistan or Iraq. The idea of a queue was a myth. Australia's laws allow people to seek asylum too, so they weren't illegal. And there was no indication that the relatively small number of boat arrivals represented a security threat. But with the opposition Labor Party echoing the government's calls to strengthen border policies, the debate quickly moved beyond facts and reason.
National security is therefore about a proper response to terrorism. It's also about having a far-sighted, strong, well-thought-out defence policy. It is also about having an uncompromising view about the fundamental right of this country to protect its borders.
Australia's government had successfully created a sense of crisis. Laws were tightened, messaging was toughened. But it had also set itself a trap. If the boats kept coming, they'd carry the blame. Then, on the 24th of August 2001, everything changed. A small Indonesian fishing boat had run into trouble in international waters, about 140 kilometres north of Christmas Island. An Australian Coast Watch plane spotted the dangerously overcrowded Palapa, but the government quickly decided that none of the 433 asylum seekers on board the vessel would ever be allowed to set foot on Australian soil. The boat was left to weather a violent storm as Australia considered its next move. One of those on board would later tell the Sydney Morning Herald of a pact that he'd made with his fellow travellers. If the boat began to sink, they'd join hands, and if they drowned, they'd drown together. Eventually, help did arrive, not from Australia, but from Norway. The MV Tampa, under the direction of the Australian Maritime Safety Authority, was cleared to rescue all those on board the Palapa. Captain Arne Rinnan was then to continue to the Indonesian port city of Merak, the nearest point at which a ship the size of the Tampa could safely dock. But when the asylum seekers realised what was happening, they demanded it to be taken to Australia or another Western nation. A group entered the ship's bridge to confront Captain Rinnan. Some had threatened to commit suicide. "Remember," they said, "we have nothing to lose." 2 days went by as Captain Rinnan continued to request assistance from the Australian government. Without success, he even went as far as sending out a Mayday signal. Still nothing. Then, around midday on the 29th of August, the captain decided to call Canberra's bluff and proceed into Australian waters. Authorities told him that he was in flagrant breach of Australian law, that if he continued, he could be charged with people smuggling, and that Special Air Service troops would soon intercept the freighter. Captain Rinnan did turn his ship around, twice in fact, but each time he feared that the anger and deteriorating health among those on board presented too much danger. the Tampa continued towards Christmas Island, an external Australian territory, despite continued warnings from Australia. As the ship approached the shore, SAS officers finally stormed the vessel.
I want to record my gratitude to the men of the Australian Defence Force who were involved in this operation. It's always important on occasions like this to remember that the men and women of our Defence Force are exposed to potential danger.
Reports of an elite security force storming the Tampa delighted those who saw the vessel as an illegal invasion of Australian territory. And the Prime Minister was quick to portray it as a successful mission. Peter Tinley was second in command of the SAS counter-terrorism squad. When he spoke to ABC television, he recalled the incident in rather different terms.
When I talked to the guys when they came back off the boarding party, I said, how did you find the group? And they said, well, they're a bunch of refugees. I'm not sure if they had thought about the threat environment in more depth, that they couldn't have just sent a naval vessel there or sent a customs vessel if there was such a thing in the area. But I can't help but feel that the Prime Minister, John Howard, viewed the SAS as something that would resonate politically to the message of border security. You can't amp it up more in the public's mind than saying, we're going to send in the SAS, we'll show you how tough we are on border security.
Australia reached out to Fiji, Kiribati, and even the newly independent East Timor in search of a country willing to accept the asylum seekers. Eventually, the tiny island nation of Nauru put its hand up in exchange for a payment of 16.5 million Australian dollars. 6 days after the rescue at sea, the Tampa affair was finally over. But Australian politics would never be the same.
We have a proud record of welcoming people from 140 different nations. But we will decide who comes to this country and the circumstances in which they come.
The 2001 election saw John Howard's government increase its majority. It was an astonishing turnaround for a party that had, months earlier, been questioning its future. It was partly timing. Voting took place just 2 months after the 9/11 attacks in New York. What might have been a dreary election dominated by tax and budgets had erupted into a frightening debate over refugees and terrorism. But even Pauline Hanson could see that Prime Minister Howard's victory owed something to her box of tricks. And as Australia stares down this year's election, that box of tricks is looking remarkably similar. Pauline Hanson is back, this time as a senator. And much like John Howard's unpopular goods and services tax, the recent Royal Commission into the banking sector had set the scene for what many thought would be a vote on financial legislation. Then came the Medivac Bill, a law designed to ensure that those held in offshore detention centres like Nauru are able to receive vital medical care. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, says it will weaken Australia's borders and encourage the people smuggling racket. It's a line that worked for John Howard in 2001. Whether it cuts through today remains to be seen. The Tampa affair may have led to a radical shift in Australia's attitude towards asylum seekers, but there are now hints that voters are increasingly questioning the policy of indefinite detention. The tricky thing about border protection is that, most of the time, people only talk about it when it's not working. But the policy is working, as well as the government intends it to work anyway. And yet, voters are talking about it. A wind of political change is blowing once again, and there may be no turning back. For Monocle, I'm Ben Ryland.